Here's Jack Patty.
Good morning and welcome into Friday. It's the third day of January, our first American DA Live for 2014, brought to you by Landscaper's Corner at 1305 Old Frankfort Pike. Be prepared for snow. Landscaper's Corner has rock salt and Landscaper's Choice ice melt, fast acting and safe for concrete. Call them at 225-9433. And Ray Larson, Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson, Happy New Year, sir.
Same to you, Jack.
Sounds like you and Betty celebrated the same way Julie and I did. We stayed up till darn near 10 o'clock on New Year's Eve.
Well, you beat me by about an hour.
I'm a partier.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah. Although I'm 61 years old, so I did get up to go to the bathroom about 12:15 and gave my wife a little kiss and told her Happy New Year.
So you got a clock somewhere close, right? A digital clock.
Absolutely. Yeah. Good morning and welcome. We have how many years now under our belt? 10 or 11?
This is, we've passed the 10-year mark.
I think we have.
Yeah.
These young lawyers that you have now were, what, in junior high school when we started this?
Yes.
And kind of, or high school maybe. No kidding.
Well, I'm not sure. Yeah. We'll find out here in a minute. This is Aspen Carlisle is with us today. She was the prosecutor in a case. And
good morning, Aspen.
And she brought her support group, Katie Webster, with her.
Hey, Katie. Hey, you know, Aspen, I think your mic may might be working. Say something in there. Yeah, you're going to have to pull that one over. That one's. We've had these problems, these issues that. Okay, now, yeah, you can just use that. Now we say, good morning, Aspen.
Good morning.
I'm sure being from Hawaii, you'd rather be there this morning.
Very much so.
I'm going to go on the 26th of February.
Lucky.
So I'm looking forward to it.
I want to talk. Aspen prosecuted very interesting case along with Brad Bryant. Brad is a wimp today and is under the weather, he says. But Aspen is from Honolulu, and I want to know a little bit about Aspen. So you're from Honolulu, and tell us a little bit about how did you end up here in Lexington?
I went from Honolulu to Ann Arbor, Michigan for my undergrad. I was a big football fan, and it's a really good school. We used to have a very powerful football program, and we're working our way back now. And once I completed that and decided I wanted to do law school, it was a little cold for me up there. So I looked south, and I was under the impression that Lexington was a lot warmer than it is today.
And your dad was the district attorney for Honolulu, because we've had him on the show a couple times.
He was for about 4 terms, I think.
And did that influence your decision to become a prosecutor?
Yes, very much so.
You know, it was interesting because when Aspen, I know her dad, Pete Carlisle, and I knew him before I knew Aspen.
Mm-hmm.
And when Aspen came to the University of Kentucky Law School, he called me up and said, would you mind calling Aspen so she has at least a contact in town? Because I don't think you knew anybody when
and
you
didn't know a single person in
really?
The state.
How about
no.
that?
And so I called her up and said, let me pick you up and take you to lunch. And so we went over and got to Billy's Barbecue and got a couple of pulled pork sandwiches and brought her back to the office. And she ate lunch with us. And then she became an intern. And when she was an intern, Jack, there was a case in Honolulu that we wanted her dad, the prosecutor there, to talk about. And so I called him up and I said, here's the deal. We'll ask Aspen to be here so you can talk to her on the show. And so he said, I'll do it. And that was the beginning of getting Aspen involved with our office. She did an internship, and here you are.
Yep.
So how long have you been a prosecutor?
A little over 2 years now.
Right. And you've gotten involved in some pretty heavy-duty cases.
Yes.
And one of them is this case that we're going to talk about today, and the defendant's name was?
Shamiko Howard.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about the facts of this case?
What happened in this case, the victim, Christopher Mayfield, was from Louisville, Kentucky. He was 25 years old. He was in town. This happened on August 5th of 2012. He was in town visiting his sister, who was a student at UK, and she was living at Newtown Crossing, and their mom was also visiting. they had gone out that night just celebrating a birthday, having fun, stopped at Tally Ho to eat, and then went back to the sister's apartment. Chris and his friend asked to be dropped off at the Speedway on South Broadway. The sister dropped them off and said, just walk back across the street when you're done. Well, when they got out of Speedway, they saw an altercation between this defendant and her husband. And
That's a fight, yeah.
In the parking lot of the Speedway?
Mm-hmm. And you can see them on the video. Speedway has really good cameras, and you can see them on the video kind of standing back, not really sure whether they should intervene or not.
Yeah.
And the husband hits or slaps this defendant, and at that point they say, okay, this is too much. We need to do something about this. They step in. Chris gets into a verbal altercation, which turns physical with the husband. He goes to punch the husband and accidentally punches this defendant. She then...
Now, wait a minute. Let's see what we
got.
These guys came, were dropped off at the Speedway. And on the way out, they see a husband and wife
in a fight.
And the husband punched...
His wife.
The wife. These guys, Chris, the guy that ends up being injured... says enough's enough, and they get into a verbal altercation that turned physical, so he turned around to slug the husband and
accidentally slugged the wife?
Punches the wife.
I see.
Yeah, okay. Shimiko.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
And upon being hit, Shimiko jumps in a car that was there. It's kind of an older model car. You see her driving around the Speedway parking lot after Chris. Chris is fleeing on foot. And she ends up hitting one of the pump guards and disabling the car.
What's a pump guard? Is that the little thing at the end that keeps you from running into...
It's a pipe. It's a...
Yeah, okay.
It's a metal.
Yeah,
about a 4-inch pipe that's in the ground. It's a U-shaped thing.
Yeah.
She runs up on one of those, disables that car. Chris takes off across South Broadway to Newtown Crossing. Shimiko then gets in another vehicle at Speedway, goes through the red light, through the intersection, and guns him down in the parking lot. And she actually runs over him.
Gun? Now you used a term here. There was no gun involved.
No. She ran over him with the vehicle.
Yeah.
It was a Dodge Charger.
Guns him down was just a
she accelerated.
I got you. And was that on tape, too?
Yes. Well, no, that part wasn't. Leading up to it was, but not him actually being hit.
You know, I was thinking, we had the prosecutor from Texas... of the wife that ran over the husband, and it was caught on tape at the hotel. Remember that? She didn't do it once. She went round and round and kept going over.
Oh, she did laps.
Yeah.
Yeah, over
the
sky.
Yeah. When you were describing that, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah. That was...
So how badly was Chris hurt?
Very badly. They didn't think that... the initial responders didn't think that he would survive. He did. He had massive head trauma, and his left arm basically doesn't work anymore.
Mm. So that's... That's the case. Now, what happened after they ran over Chris?
After she ran over Chris, she went into the
Gold Star Chili
parking lot, backed out, and then took off and left. She fled. She actually ended up calling into Speedway, asking the police to drive that first car to her in Winchester. She said she had been assaulted in the parking lot, and she wanted her car back. They tried to find out, said, okay, we'll do it, to find out where she was. She wouldn't give them her location, and so she wasn't caught that night.
Where was the husband through all this?
She picked him up on the way out, so he was kind of
She was driving, and he was in the passenger seat.
He was not in the passenger seat when she ran over Chris. On her way out of Newtown Crossing, she stopped and picked him up.
Okay.
Well, she forgot the first fight.
Yeah, I guess.
She forgave him,
and, you know,
him,
people, I've actually seen it. You probably have, too, altercations between couples, and you don't want to see anybody get hurt, obviously. But there is a question, at what point are you being nosy, and at what point is it time to step in and go, wait a minute, that's enough. I saw a couple in a verbal sort of a fight over on Limestone once, and I stood in the door of a restaurant and just watched to see if it was going to, and I don't have an ounce of hero in me, but it looked like he was going to hit her, and they kind of broke up and walked away. But, you know, people say, why don't more people get involved? Well, more people don't get involved because of just what happened here.
Mm-hmm.
You're afraid of what could happen, you know?
Well, a lot of the times the police will go to a domestic violence call where a boyfriend, girlfriend, or a husband and wife are fighting, literally fighting, and the police intervene, and both of them turn on the police officer.
Really?
Yeah. That's not an uncommon occurrence.
Why don't we take a break? If you have a question or comment for us, 253-5959. Touch star 590 from AT&T, toll free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590, or email jackpatty@wvlkam.com. 25 minutes after 9 o'clock, a case we're talking about this morning that, as I mentioned to Ray off the air, we have Ray Larson, of course, and Aspen Carlisle, assistant common law attorney, about when do you get involved as a bystander if you see a fight that's about to take place or that is taking place, and people are afraid and don't know exactly how to react. Let's go to the phones. This is Joe. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Jack. I was just going to relay a story to you all, and I did appreciate your how cold it was this morning.
Thank you. My favorite was the local flasher who told a woman what he looked like.
Yeah,
that's how cold it was. All right.
I was at school at Northern Kentucky University in around 92, 93, before cell phones were really the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at Walmart buying stuff for the dorm, and I saw this man smack the woman he was with. I didn't know then, I didn't know the situation, but the way I was raised down here in Harrodsburg, you never hit a woman. You just,
hopefully that's the way most of us were raised, we hope.
Yeah, and it's just not acceptable.
Yeah.
So, I'm 6'6", and I was 205 pounds or so, but I walked up to him and say, "Hey, pal, that's not how you do it." Well, he turns on me and punches me in the eye, and I had some training in the martial arts, and I broke his nose, and then the female absolutely just turned on me saying, "What have you done?" You know, because I broke his nose. And then the police came and they just said, "Mr. or Joe, you just go away and we'll handle this." But,
so it sounds like the same thing happened to you that happens sometimes, as Ray described, to the policeman when they come and try to defend someone, and then the woman turns on them.
Exactly. Yes, sir.
I appreciate the call. Thank you, Ray.
Well, that's exactly what I'm saying. Okay, so Aspen, we've got this incident which Chris Mayfield has been run over by Shamiko Howard. Shamiko and her husband get in another car and get out of town, and then call and they say, "I want my car back," and the police are trying to find out where she is. So let's talk about the investigation of this thing, and what does it lead to charges as a result of the investigation?
They catch up. She, of course, calls and wants her car back and won't give them a location. They go out to family addresses that they have for her. None of them will tell the police where they are. The detectives end up contacting local hospitals and ask them to give them a call if she turns up. And she turned up at one of the hospitals, and they gave the detective in the case a call.
Was it local or was it out of town?
You know, I don't remember.
All right.
I believe it was local.
So she was hurt badly enough that...
No. What? She was there. She had, I think, a cut lip. But
why did she end up at the hospital?
I have no idea why she went to the hospital.
But she wasn't there for treatment.
My guess is she was, since she was claiming she was assaulted, but she certainly wasn't seriously injured.
I see.
Okay, so then let's talk about... I was called to this scene. We get calls because it was first called out as a collision reconstruction unit, meaning there's a vehicular assault. So I was at this scene. And this car that she first ran into the pump guard and disabled the car, looked like a real pimp mobile. It just did. So we were out there, and the collision reconstruction unit was there. But they also, at the time, called the homicide unit, who deal with serious assaults as well. And so, as a result, tell us about the investigation, Aspen, and where do we go from there?
CRU, the collision reconstruction unit, responded, and they began looking at the scene, looking for the prints on the road. They found a shoe scuff that told them exactly where it was that Chris was hit in the road, as well as where his body landed. They saw drag marks along the way, so they knew that he had been taken under the car as well. But then when they started talking to witnesses and realized that it was actually an intentional act, that's when the homicide unit became
involved.
Were
there many witnesses?
There were. There were the woman who worked at Speedway, Susan Lake, was the first one to call police, and she had seen the altercation. John Zaney was a tow truck driver, and he was in the parking lot, and he was a great witness for us. He actually took off across the street after her. And there were several people outside of Gold Star Chili waiting for a taxi that also witnessed it.
All right, we're taking a break. 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T, toll free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590, or email jackpatty@wvlkam.com.
The news you expect, the balance you've asked for. News Talk 590, WVLK. Depend on it.
We're back, 9:35, 25 before 10, talking about a case that involved a guy that was a Good Samaritan, really, that tried to protect a woman that was being assaulted. And from a legal standpoint, Ray, how does all that play out? If you intervene and end up hurting somebody, are you, I guess, from the...
Well, there are laws that deal with self-protection and protection of others.
Okay.
And that allow people to protect other people.
Okay.
If they think they're going to be seriously injured or killed or that sort of thing. So... The law anticipates some of those kind of issues. I want to go back to something that Aspen said that we've learned from our collision reconstruction unit officers, and that's this scuff mark. Did you hear her say that? Yeah. Typically, when a pedestrian is hit, there's a foot on the ground, typically, and when that happens, when they're struck and there's a foot on the ground, it causes that shoe to make a scuff mark on the pavement. And when that happens, the police will be looking for those scuff marks to identify exactly where the person was. Very interesting kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Another thing has to do with hats. A lot of times if you've got a hat on, your hat will drop somewhere in the vicinity of where the collision occurred between the pedestrian and the vehicle. Okay, so how did we end up catching this chick?
Well, they found her at the hospital. The hospital personnel called the detective. They responded. They arrested her. She was charged with assault first degree for the injuries she caused to Chris, as well as tampering of physical evidence, and that was for removing her car from the scene.
Okay, now let's talk about the elements of assault. In the first degree, that's the most serious assault charge. And what do you have to prove in order to make the assault first charge stick?
Well, with this, it was when she intentionally caused a serious physical injury by means of a deadly weapon. And the deadly weapon in this case was the car.
That's been defined by Kentucky case law as a deadly weapon or dangerous instrument.
Had you ever seen a case in your career where it was used intentionally to hurt somebody else?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Rare, though, right?
Yes. It was a long time ago. It was in the late 80s, and it was Jimmy Gray who was down on going near the Clay's Ferry, and he tried to run over people in the parking lot, and then he came out in a real he was, of course, under the influence, and he came and then ran right into a car and killed a mother and a child. And he got a 70, I think it was a 70-year sentence for murder, wanton murder. Okay, so she's arrested and charged with assault first degree, and what's the penalty for that? What's the penalty
for that?
That's
a Class B felony. It carries a penalty of 10 to 20 years.
Okay. And so now this guy is basically permanently disabled.
Mm-hmm.
Now tell me what the situation is with him, because he
was in the hospital. He was taken to UK that night. He remained in the hospital for about 3 weeks. And after that, he was transported to a rehab facility in Louisville, and he remained there for several months.
Yeah. So what's happened here is the 10 to 20 year sentence frequently is perceived by victims as, look, my loved one who was trying to do the right thing, next thing you know, here he is. He has a life sentence of being disabled, and his life is completely changed. And that's where victims think this is unfair. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this case was tried.
We took this case to trial in October of this year. It was a 3-day trial, and the jury came back with guilty of both assault first and tampering with physical evidence.
Okay. Did you offer this guy anything?
We had offered him. We had offered him the minimum on what she was charged with, and so
was 10 years.
But she had a prior felony, and so that was enhanced because she was a persistent felony offender, and so it was a 20-year offer.
What was her prior?
Her prior was for trafficking. It was a trafficking in 2003.
Now, trafficking is not a speeding ticket. What does that mean?
Yeah. Trafficking is selling drugs. In her case, it was cocaine, and it was more than 4 grams of cocaine, so it was a C felony.
Right. So this is this young woman was what we call a frequent flyer. Or repeat felony offender,
she wasn't interested in what you had offered.
No, I think she thought she had a defense to this.
What was the defense?
And the defense at trial was that they agreed that she had assaulted him, but said that it was an assault while acting under the influence of an extreme emotional disturbance.
Was there any alcohol, drugs?
We don't know since she left.
Okay.
So they didn't catch up with her, so they weren't able to test that.
One of the concerns you have with a lot of the hit and run or leaving the scene of an accident is a failure to stop and render assistance is that people leave if they've had things to drink and then at some point turn themselves back in.
When they've sobered up.
Yeah. And that's, that creates some issues. And for the longest period of time, leaving the scene of leaving the scene was a misdemeanor, and if you're drunk and you run into somebody and cause an assault, then it's a felony. So the law basically said leave and then turn yourself in later, because what's going to happen is you're going to be charged and get a misdemeanor instead of a felony. Mm-hmm. They changed the law somewhat, but it was it's not literally strong enough to discourage people from leaving the scene, because they do still. So the you picked a jury. Now, tell me what you're looking for when you in a case like this.
We're looking for people that are paying attention. A lot of times what you'll find with the jury selection process is people falling asleep or just being very unhappy to be there. And so people
really. They go to sleep?
Sometimes.
We've had that occur.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm.
During a trial sometimes?
Yeah.
No kidding.
You know, Jack,
what do you do? You wake them up?
Well, you try to point it out to the judge the bailiff go over and do that.
Shake them?
Yeah. I can remember making a closing argument in Paducah once, and the guy right in front of me said, just gave out this, this monumental first class yawn, and I just looked at him. I said, am I keeping you up? And he said, just barely.
Oh, geez.
That's all I needed to hear.
So you're looking for people that can pay attention and stay awake.
For people that pay attention and stay awake.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, and so did, and you got a jury, and it lasted 3 days.
Lasted 3 days, and they came back with guilty.
Did she take the stand?
She did take the stand, and what she testified to was that she had been a victim of domestic violence at the hands of her husband, and so when she was punched by Chris, she essentially just snapped, and that's what caused her to get in the car. She said that after she disabled the first car, she remembered nothing. So she didn't remember getting in the second car, she didn't remember hitting Chris, and she didn't remember picking up her husband and driving off.
Did they have a psychiatrist or some sort of an expert witness?
No, they didn't. They just,
to verify that.
I believe she was their only witness.
Well, whose car was the other car?
I believe it was a friend's car. It wasn't her car.
Well, what happens now, Jack, is that car, that the friend's car, then becomes evidence. Mm-hmm. So that goes to the impound lot until the trial.
Mm-hmm. And so that friend just lost their car.
Yeah. It's a little bit of a hassle for the friend.
We're taking
former
a break.
Friend.
Yeah, former friend, right. Taking our last break. If you have a question or comment, 253-5959. Touch star 590 from AT&T. Toll free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590. Or email jackpatty at wvlkam.com. We have a call. This is Steve. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. I was wondering if you could explain or answer as to what's required to prove or is second-degree assault, and is alcohol intoxication, is that a legitimate excuse as to not be responsible for second-degree assault?
That's a great question, Ray. You want Aspen to answer it. She doesn't want to answer it. It's back to you, Ray.
Well, when you get into – you got to first define wanton state of mind. There are a number of states of mind in Kentucky. One is intentional, and that means you intend the result. Another state of mind is wanton. Wanton means you perceive the risk that your behavior could cause somebody serious physical injury or death. You consciously disregard that risk, and the result happens. Voluntary intoxication is not a defense. That, and that's stated in the law. So I think that answers the voluntary intoxication issue. Now, assault in the second degree, it involves injury, physical injury, which is not serious physical injury, with a dangerous instrument or deadly weapon, or serious physical injury without one of those weapons. So I don't know if that answered your question. I don't know if it's sufficient for you, but that's
it. Huh?
Yeah.
Thank you, Steve.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about, you know, we can't talk about these kind of cases without spending a little time talking about the victim, because mm-hmm. victims are very important to us, and Mary Houlihan would probably whip me if I didn't. So did the victim testify in the case?
Chris testified. He did a great job. One of the problems with these sort of cases is the head injury. And so as soon as he was hit by the car, he suffered massive head trauma. And so he didn't remember much of the night. He remembered going out with his sister and mom and friend. He remembered being at Speedway. And then he didn't remember anything else. And so...
So why did he testify then?
Well, he testified because we needed to establish that it was a serious physical injury. And so we needed to establish that he was at serious risk of death, which he was very much so, or that he was disfigured or had lost the use of a bodily organ.
This is JB. Hang on, JB. Good morning.
Good morning. I was a victim of domestic abuse by my wife, and she was drunk, and... she was only charged with fourth degree domestic violence or assault, and I thought it should have been a little higher.
Well, it really, frankly, it has to do, I don't know what the specifics are, but the charging officer has to try to make a decision as to the seriousness of the injury and the method by which the injury is created, and in your instance, it's physical injury is the definition of the injury in a assault fourth degree charge, which is a misdemeanor. But that's, you know, that's the definition issue, and I don't know anything about your case.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, Aspen, so tell us what's going on with Chris now, the victim.
Well, Chris now spends a lot of time at home. He hasn't been able to hold down a job because he has no use of his left arm. His father is really involved in his life and helps a lot, as well as his mom and sister. So whereas
how old is he, roughly?
He was 25 at the time, okay. So he's 26 now.
Yeah. And see, that's the sad part of these things is she's gone off to prison because she's a repeat felony offender.
Mm-hmm.
And was she probated on the first offense?
I'm not sure whether she was probated on the trafficking. What she did after she committed this offense, she had also picked up a federal drug charge. So she was actually serving federal time when we went to trial on this case. And when she was sentenced on her federal case, the judge ordered that sentence run consecutive to whatever she got in our case. And so after she's finished serving her time on our case, she has 21 months to serve federally.
And who was the judge in your case?
We had Judge Clark, I believe.
Hmm.
Yeah. So this she ends up with about 22 years now. An assault first degree, Jack, is a violent offense. So she has to serve 85% before she's eligible for parole.
I see.
And, you know, it's very interesting because assault second degree in which somebody's injured is not considered a violent crime. Neither is manslaughter in the second degree, for crying out loud, is not considered a violent offense. And I don't understand that. But they made a decision to, if you run over and kill a police officer, then that becomes a violent offense. And I think, well, that's fine, but what about the rest of us?
Right.
And I think the legislature ought to man up and make any kind of a crime in which somebody is that violence is involved, it should be a violent crime.
Mm-hmm.
And they should have to serve 85% of their crime. That's a real live victim's issue. And so who knows? Maybe someday that'll happen. Now, is this case under appeal now? Do we know?
I don't know. Actually, it's not, because she ended up pleading after the jury came back guilty, so she doesn't have that option.
Well, that's interesting.
Could you explain how that works?
Yeah.
Well, after the jury came back with a guilty verdict, instead of go through the PFO phase for several different reasons, we ended up having her plead to the minimum on those charges.
Oh, okay.
So what happened?
I remember when I was burglarized,
mm-hmm,
the first time, and the guy was caught. We went through the part of receiving stolen property. Couldn't prove that he had two of my watches in his pocket.
Right.
And they caught him.
And one of them said Jack Patty.
I think
on
they
the
both
back.
Did. Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, I remember we went through the phase of guilt or innocence of receiving stolen property, and then you had to go back and do the PFO phase.
Well, it's a penalty phase, because what we do. In a trial is you got two phases, the guilt innocence phase, where the jury listens to the evidence and makes a decision about whether or not a person is guilty or not guilty.
I see.
And if they're found guilty, then we do the penalty phase, and that's when the jury gets to hear about the guy's or gal's criminal record.
Okay. Yeah. Ray, thank you. Thank you very much, Aspen.
Thank you.